Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. We are so happy you are joining us once again. Happy Sunday. Happy whatever day it is if you're listening on a podcast.
That's true. It may not be Sunday if you're listening right now.
I mean, we're just confusing our listeners. What day of the week is it?
It's like a time travel thing.
It is.
We don't know when it is.
But yeah, but we love our podcasters, Spotify, Apple, and KMUN, all the places you can listen.
All right.
Okay.
You've been traveling.
I have been traveling. That's for another show. We'll talk about all the travels. Yeah, an adventure in Alana's travels.
So you got something for us?
But I do, but I have a common phrase. So this is origins, common phrases, where they came from. And this is kind of a fun one because it's keeping up with the Joneses. A sad commentary upon 20th century American living is the obsessive suburban desire to keep up with the Joneses. This phrase gets its name from the title of a comic strip drawn by I. Buckeller and first published in 1911. So true to form were the characters of his strip that even though it is no longer published, its title, Keeping Up with the Joneses, still occupies a rare position of prominence among American common phrases.
I would not have guessed that, and I would not have remembered that at all.
So, right, like, and my question is, well, what did the Joneses do in the comic strip?
That's right.
Right? I mean, were they cool?
Why would you want to keep up with them?
I don't know. So we'll
have to investigate.
The comic strip, Keeping Up with the Joneses.
All right. Shall we get right to the history highlights? Because we have a guest.
We should get
to this. So these are the things that happen tomorrow, August 18th. As always, icebreakers or things to talk about around the dinner table. 1227.
Whoa.
Genghis Khan, the Mongol leader who forged an empire stretching from the east coast of China west to the Aral Sea, dies in camp during a campaign against the Chinese.
Oh.
He was over 60 years old.
which was old for...
Yeah.
Okay.
1590.
Yeah.
1590. I'm always astounded, like, how big his empire could have been in that time period. It's just amazing to me.
Right. And the documentation.
Yeah. It's really, really large. All right. 1590. John White, the governor of the Roanoke Island Colony in present-day North Carolina, returns from a supply trip to England to find the settlement completely deserted. Where did they go? They're all gone. It's a mystery.
Oh, yeah.
I think we kind of know.
Yeah.
But 1872, Aaron Montgomery Ward issues the first catalog for mail order business. It is a one sheet listing 163 available items.
Montgomery Ward. Oh, how fun. His first name was Aaron.
I like the 163 items.
Right. On one page.
All right. 1909, the mayor of Tokyo presents Washington, D.C. with 2,000 cherry trees.
Ooh.
That's why there's cherry trees everywhere.
Right. Because that's all we could offer back.
That's right.
Cherry trees. Oh.
And that was William Howard Taft that decided to plant them along the Potomac.
Okay.
All right. 1926, the first televised weather map.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Early 1926. It's broadcast for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Washington, D.C.
Okay. NOAA. Interesting.
Yeah, we like NOAA.
The first one.
1926.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 1990. I want to know what they were tracking. 1991, the Soviet hardliners launch a coup against Gorbachev. Poor Gorbachev. All right. But our history highlight of the day couldn't be anything else. 1920. A dramatic battle in the Tennessee House of Representatives ends with the state ratifying the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution. After decades of struggle and protest by suffragettes across the country, the decisive vote is cast by a 24-year-old representative who reportedly changed his vote after receiving a note from his mother.
I love it. Yes.
Okay, Mom, I'll change the vote.
And we actually have an episode on that because I visited the Tennessee Capitol. And then part of the tour was to go to down the street. There's a hotel where the suffragettes met. And so it's beautiful, and it has stayed beautiful as well. And so we got to sit there and, you know, just think about these women that were working so hard, and they're so close to where all of these men were making these decisions, right? and they knew that they needed to change things.
And Tennessee was the final one. Yeah. Threw it over at the top.
So kind of a big deal.
But I want to know what was in that note.
Right.
I think you can probably guess.
Because yeah. I love the mom just for that. I don't care who she is, what she did, just writing a note saying, you better vote this way.
Yeah.
Whatever she wrote in it. I'd love that. So.
Well, that's right. Good. Well, and so we have an amazing woman here with us today. Dion Plamondon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Glad I convinced you to join us and talk. We've had your husband on, Jason Plamondon. You can go back to our podcast to find his interviews and learn about how we remember his name. Because now at the hospital, we always refer to him as Jason from London.
But I have good authority that this is going to be an even better show.
I think so. Yes, I think so. Well, so let's just start with where you came from. Where did you grow up?
Well, mostly in Portland, but I was born an Air Force brat. So born in California, moved to Hawaii.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, Oahu's beautiful. And then a few years in Louisiana. And we settled in Portland.
And what are the ages that you're moving to these different places?
Well, I just missed Puerto Rico. Just missed it by, I think, a few months. And then, so I was born in California, and then we moved to Oahu when I was 5.
Okay, so you actually remember then.
Yeah, well, sort of. Well, maybe I was a little bit younger. So I have a few memories of California. And then Oahu, we moved to Louisiana. So we must have moved there when I was 3. Louisiana when I was 5. And so my Hawaii memories are just these deep core memories, and then but not anything very specific. And then Louisiana was a few years, and that's where I remember more.
And from Louisiana to Portland.
And then Louisiana to Portland. So the climate was a shock. So,
the climate, the culture, all of it.
Right. Yeah. I learned that rain can be cold when I moved here.
Right.
So, yeah, I was not used to wearing a raincoat in Louisiana. I just, you know, it was like walking through a shower. After Hawaii and then Louisiana and then moving here, I learned how to use raincoats and umbrellas.
So about grade school then. Is that grade school?
Yes.
That you started? And you were in downtown Portland? Or what's your...
No, I was in outer southeast. So it is it's a charming area known as Felony Flats. Oh. So yeah. Nice. Yeah, I didn't even learn the real name for it. What's that?
Even then.
I didn't know that until I was a teenager and I didn't understand it. But it wasn't until I moved away and then went back to it. I'm like, oh, I get it. So yeah, it's a little Portland nickname.
That's fun. So tell us about the schools that you went to.
Let's see. Joseph Lane in Portland. First I started out at Vestal, which was a really nice little school on 82nd and Gleason. It's still there. And then Joseph Lane, it's also still there, but it's changed a little bit. It used to be up through 8th grade, then 6th grade, and now I don't know. And then Selwood Middle School, and then Franklin High School, where I met my future husband.
Yes, I love that. We're going to get to that story. But let's talk about Selwood and that area and growing up there. Were you able to walk through the streets? Were you able? I mean, what was it like? I mean, it's urban living, but it also doesn't feel like urban living, I kind of feel like.
Well, so where I was, yes, it was walkable. I mean, it was the 80s, you know, and the 70s. And, you know, so we walked everywhere, rode our bikes everywhere. It was very, very different than times today. I wouldn't say that the area was necessarily that walkable. We just had to walk. And then when I moved out on my own, I, you know, went straight for, you know, downtown living and then was able to walk everywhere and restaurants and coffee shops and everything. And that kind of freedom was amazing.
So speaking of freedom, I'm fascinated by people that grew up in a city and, you know, just thinking of what ages early that I was allowed just to, I'll see you later. and they didn't care where I was going. Yeah. And as long as you're back by dinner time or when it gets dark. So how free were you? I mean, were you going around downtown? I mean, how far are you?
Did you take the Max
going out
by your, with friends?
Well, when I was a kid, there was no such thing as Max. So we did have buses, though. Actually, Portland has a pretty good public transit system. And when I was a teenager, I could start going downtown. When I was a kid, I could walk to the store. It was about 8 blocks away, which I think is unimaginable for parents these days. It just would. I don't have children, but I would be a nervous wreck if my kids were that far away. You know, I'd ride my bike to Mount Scott Park, which was even further. And then, you know, yeah, as a teenager, go downtown, walk. I was out walking around at all hours of the night, and oh man, I would not do that as an adult.
Yeah, right.
Just teenagers, they're just so invincible. But yeah, I got super lucky.
There's a lot of things that we wouldn't do as adults. That
yes.
We did as
yeah. I have better sense now. Yeah.
So as you're growing up and then going into high school, what are you thinking about doing at that point?
I come from a working class background, and so, you know, what we did is we just got jobs and we worked. So, you know, it was a matter of finding work that I could do that I kind of enjoyed. And I'd say that my professional development has all been the series of finding something that I thought was okay to do. And then, you know, now I'm in a career. I don't even know how that happened, but I've been with the same company for 17 years and counting, and I seem to be doing okay. So,
17 years with one company is pretty okay, I'd say.
Yeah.
Either that or you're really flying under the radar, right? For not to notice.
So what were those jobs? Where did you start to work then?
Oh,
those
boy.
First ones.
Well,
the fun ones.
Yeah. So I think that, well, retail had its moments. I worked at a thrift store for a while. That was it was on 82nd Avenue, which, if you know Portland, is not a great area. But the variety of odd donations that would come through, it was just endlessly fascinating. And the people that came in too, I just was exposed to all different types of people, and I really enjoyed that. Very, very social job. And my check stand was always the most organized, which I'm very proud of.
And this is like as the grunge is kind of hitting Portland too, right? I mean, so
yes.
Thrift shops, I mean,
yeah.
I remember growing up, and the thrift shops in Portland were amazing. I mean, they really were, and they weren't all that cheap. Always either.
Back then it was pretty cheap.
Okay.
Yeah, back then it was pretty cheap. And then one of my perks was we got a gift certificate for the store. We wouldn't get raises, but we did get gift certificates to the free merchandise that people would donate. And so I would save them up, and then I got my first television set.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. The screen had pinstripes. So it wasn't a great TV, but it was a color TV, and I felt pretty lucky to have it.
For free.
For free, especially, yeah. Let's see, I did house cleaning for a little while for a company that specialized in fire and smoke, Pacific mm-hmm. Fire and Smoke. I don't think it's in business anymore, so I can safely yes. say who it is, because this was about 30 years ago or so. And I've worked in high tech for a little while. So that was production was really satisfying to have a job where, you know, it was finite. You would have a task, complete the task is done. And then to have nothing, no more production on the line. It was, you know, like to have a clear plate at Right. the end of every shift was kind of nice. And I still have got friends from my stint at Fujitsu, and which is also no longer in Oregon or the US, I think. And then worked in mental health services for a while, and now I work as an executive assistant. So
for another healthcare company.
Yeah, right. So, you know, yeah. So I kind of done a little bit of everything. One of the best jobs was ice cream scooping. I worked at an ice cream place. So I wouldn't say the job was great, but the ice cream was pretty phenomenal. Yeah.
So how annoying are the people that, well, let me try a little spoon of this one. Let me try a little spoon of that one.
Oh, they wanted to come. Yeah, they were motivated to come to me because I would get the little tiny spoons, these little sample spoons, and I would just like really pile it on. Oh. So, you know.
Like get a good sample.
We had so much. I was happy to share it with people.
They don't give samples at a lot of places anymore, I've noticed. Have you been to an ice cream shop recently? I don't know that any of our local ones.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know that I have gotten a sample of ice cream in a long time.
Well, there you go. So you can't. So tell us about then your reason to stay in the Pacific Northwest.
It's home. You know, as a kid, kind of moving around a little bit, I wanted to put down roots somewhere, and I would get itchy about every year and a half to kind of like, I think it was just embedded at that point in my DNA where I'd want to get up and move somewhere. And once we got to Portland, I was satisfied moving to different neighborhoods. So, you know, and then Oregon is just it's a beautiful place, friendly people. I mean, I can't imagine anywhere else feeling more like home than Oregon.
Well, what's the move from Portland to the coast?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's funny. I have always kind of considered myself pretty laid back. And, you know, I'm not super type A. I'm detail oriented when I need to be, but I don't like drive towards certain goals. And when I got out here, our real estate agent, who was a super friendly guy, when I was asking about certain, you know, the deadlines on certain things, he's like, you need to relax. You're on the coast now. You're on coast time. So that was a little different to find out that that I was still coming to an area where that was moving at a slower pace than even I was. So, but yeah, you just got to relax. And even now driving around after we've been here 4.5 years and, you know, tourists come through and they're either driving very, very slow because they're, you know, on vacation time, or they're driving very, very fast. And when they're driving very fast, I'm like, what is the hurry with these people?
Or going the wrong way on a one way.
Oh man, yeah.
Or the backups, or the construction during summertime, which I've loved. There's so much construction. But what about the weather too? The weather is slightly different from the valley.
It is. People in Portland do not believe it, but it is true. So, and I actually looked up a website that supports this, where we get 50 more days of rain than Portland. So it's quantifiable. It's provable. You know, I'll say that the first year, whatever the weather did, I was enchanted. I really just, you know, so it was so different, and just the spectacular sunsets and then the fog in the morning, it was so moody, and you know, I loved it. And then it's been 4 years, and so now I've learned, like, the sun comes out, you got to go outside. Don't take anything for granted. And then, you know, if it's, and also like the weather changes every 5 minutes, it seems like, so don't get so upset if it's raining. It's going to stop raining.
Or drive north or south, right?
I mean, we're sort of in this weird little microclimate, you know, between Seaside and Astoria. And so, you know, whatever is happening in Seaside, it's not quite happening where we're at. And then Astoria is even, like, you know, nicer weather. So, yeah,
nicer or hotter.
That's what I was going to say. It's not even that much difference between the Willamette Valley and out here. It's town to town, and then with us being involved with the Astoria Column, I have never realized what an entire different climate it is up the hill from down.
It's the strangest thing.
Yeah, it really is. It could be snowing here and not up there, raining up there and nothing down here.
Right, the sun is out where I'm at. I can see Neocone Mountain down the beach, and it's, you know, it's just socked in fog. So yeah, it's just wherever you go, it's a little bit different. It's kind of a little potpourri.
So sun comes out and you got to get outside. What do you do when you go outside? What kinds of things do you like to do here?
Well, so we adopted, we've got two dogs. So one's kind of a rescue. We're just his second family. And I wouldn't say we rescued him. He kind of rescued us. He's the sweetest. But he was lonely, so we got a genuine rescue. So we got him a friend, and we've got one Basset Hound, Max, who's, you know, Basset Hound energy. And then we got him Titus to be his friend, and he is incredibly high energy. So it's mainly just trying to get Titus to burn a little energy. So, yeah, they're both very, very sweet boys, but oof, boy. Yeah, the
lots
energy
of
is endless. Yes, endless
time.
Energy.
And are they beach dogs? Do they like cutting?
They do. They do. Yes, they love it. So Titus is, I say he's half wild. He's I think 3/4 wild. So he has to stay leashed. And also Max, because he's a basset. He'll follow his nose and we'll never see him again. So yeah, they're very, very good boys.
That's awesome.
And are there preferred, because I'm no longer a dog owner and it's been a while since I had a dog. So are there preferred beaches for dogs? Is there like one place better than another or a trail that's better than another?
Well, I like Sunset Beach because you can get close to it's nice and flat. So, I mean, I've got one dog. Well, they're both pulling on the leashes, if I'm being honest. I've been trying to leash train them, but it's not going great. So, but yeah, so if I'm going to get dragged through the sand, I'd prefer it to be a nice flat surface. So Sunset Beach is really nice.
Yeah. I think that's where I see the most too. I mean, cause it's just so wide too. So if the dogs are off leash, they can just run right for forever.
See, when I had a dog, it got off leash, but it was not on purpose.
Oh,
and then she would stay 5 feet ahead of me.
Yeah.
And you're trying to like get her back onto the leash and she make sure there's just that 5 foot distance.
Yeah.
It was quite annoying.
Fun for her though.
Yes. We'd chase her downtown middle of the night.
No. So going back to high school, your time in high school, what were some of your memories of high school? What do you remember? Was there any teacher? This is one of Max's favorite questions. Teachers that had a real profound influence on you?
Good or bad.
Yeah, good or bad. And we've heard some bad ones recently,
I've got a long list.
Well, yeah. Let's see. I had a few teachers that they had very low expectations of their students, and I love to read. So I would sit in history class, math, algebra, reading just novels. I was not doing homework. I was not paying any attention. I have suffered for it, especially in math. So so I had some kind of checked out teachers, but my English teacher, Miss Swan, was phenomenal. She was so intelligent and she was a tough grader, really tough. So I wouldn't say that I was a high achiever in high school, but she really, really like provoked me to do my best. So I appreciate that even still. And then, oh my God, I cannot believe I don't remember his name, but I had an acting teacher. I was in theater for 4 years. I'm not an actress. I was in a couple plays. I did not get any lead roles or anything, probably for a very good reason, but I did a bunch of set design and stuff. And so, you know, that's where I wouldn't say that I'm an artistic person either, but I really, really liked doing the set design and helping out with that stuff. And that kept me after school working on these projects and coming in, you know, after hours. And, you know, I organized the costume department and stuff, just weird tasks like that. And I lettered in theater, which, you know, for a not high achieving high school student, you know, I can at least brag about, you know, well, I did letter.
Yeah.
So Jason teases me about it. And so I think he's jealous. He didn't letter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He explained he wasn't out on the football field.
No, he was not.
Some might say theater is better than the football.
I lettered in theater as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, so, yeah. See, well, were you an actress or were you in the behind the scenes like me?
I was front of scenes, but I didn't get the major roles either, though. So, yeah. But I, too, was also reading during math class and, yeah, have suffered as well.
Yeah. Turns out math is really important, you
it
know.
It is so important.
Yeah.
But so is reading. So,
yes.
You know.
I still love reading. I don't love math, but I do love reading.
Yeah. There's our lesson for the day.
So, back to just for a second, but to I assume your father was in the Air Force moving around?
He was.
So, they get transferred to Portland. Or is that
no?
A
he retired.
Okay.
Yeah. That's so he retired. No.
I was kind of curious.
He,
like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, So I just recently got the story about his retirement from him, and you know, he would have stayed in. So he was very happy with that life. You know, he's got his pension and everything. He was in the Air Force for 16 years and the Navy for 4. So he started out in the Navy, but he served during Vietnam and was never deployed. And it wasn't until later that he found out, well, his Navy tour of Southeast Asia disqualified him, whatever the term is, from having to serve in Vietnam. So yeah, so he safely got through this, you know, really tough time. And then,
It's amazing.
yeah, my mother said, "I'm done. I'm done with this life." And her family's from here, so we've got loads of family in the, you know, Pacific Northwest, and that's where she wanted to be.
And after sweating through summers in Louisiana.
Louisiana.
Yeah, back in the days before everyone had air conditioning and stuff too. So, yeah, you'd open a window and turn on a fan. And I would not say that that works very well in those kinds of climates,
Thick.
but it's what we had.
It's just moving hot air.
I
Just
know.
it's,
Yeah,
it's
but
not making
yeah.
anything better.
Everyone's just living in the same, you know, sauna.
So, have you been back to Louisiana at all?
No, I have not. I'd love to go though. It's really beautiful. I do say that, like, we're pretty spoiled out here with our wildlife and our bugs in particular. Yeah, the bugs are bigger and more aggressive in the South. And then alligators. I was really scared of alligators. You know, we lived near a bayou, and you know, I never went down to the water because I was scared of getting eaten by an alligator.
It's probably a good choice.
Yeah, a little 7-year-old snack running around. Yes, I think,
Did you ever see one in the wild?
No, I only saw them in it. Well, I never, no, I don't think I ever saw an alligator in the wild. I saw water moccasins though. So, yeah, you don't want to be in a boat and have snakes swimming towards you. That's
You've just
what is nature doing
you've reinforced my stereotypical view of Louisiana.
And all of the
Yeah.
South. So I lived
Yeah.
in Florida, and I was on a tour in the Everglades. And so, you know, there are alligators everywhere there. And the guide's like, "Oh, you don't have to worry about the alligator. You'll be long gone after a water moccasin gets you first." Yeah.
Just how did we even survive? I just don't even understand.
But there they teach you every body of water has an alligator in it. Everyone. So a creek, right? Or a little pond, like a man-made pond, can likely have. So you don't go wading anywhere.
No.
So
No,
yeah.
we got a pet snapping turtle for a little while after a flood. So it
Oh,
rained
how
like crazy.
funny.
The bayou flooded, and then a turtle wound up in our front yard. So they do not make good pets.
I
So
cannot
they do
imagine.
not. So that was not a smart thing for us to do.
How long did he last, or did you have to free him, or did he just not
I think
take
you
to captivity?
have, well, we named him Touche the Turtle. That was a cartoon, I think, when we were kids, or maybe when my dad was a kid. And he bit my oldest sister on her belly.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's when we had to set him free.
But he
So
was a snapping turtle.
he was doing what he did.
Yeah,
Yeah. He was
exactly.
just following his nature.
You knew what I was when you brought me in.
I know.
But
Yeah.
it's biting on the belly though.
Yeah, she had a scar on her belly for the longest time
Yikes.
too. Yeah, they pack a pretty good punch.
That's terrible. So as we wrap up our time with Dion Plamondon, again, thank you for being with us. Tell us what keeps you here on the coast.
Well, so my husband's work, for one thing, he works with amazing people. He does a job that he loves, and really, you know, when I step outside and I see the spectacular sunsets and, you know, the quiet, the clean air. I mean, I don't think that there's anywhere more beautiful in the world. So, I mean, just last night I stepped out and the sunset was just this molten red and gold, and it was just amazing. I mean, how do we get to live in such a beautiful place? It's just, yeah.
I agree.
You're a bit of a poet
I know.
in
What a
your descriptions of
great
things.
note to end on. And I agree about the staff too, because I work with her husband at Providence Seaside Hospital. We can say the name. But yeah, we're so glad you guys are part of our community, and thanks for